Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Care to Read. Thank you for joining us this evening. You've got your Omeka 7 in the house, the advocate, the one you need, and the advisor, the one you want. Thank you for joining us this evening for another segment of Health and Education. I'd like to talk with you about a little review of what we've covered so far. As you know, we have been talking about curriculum and the types of curriculum that are best suited for the urban city children. We have been talking about curriculum and what it takes to make up a good curriculum. And one of the things that we are going to continue talking about is how can you develop a curriculum that's suited for child development? And also, is it necessary to tutor preschoolers? Is it necessary to tutor them? And is tutoring something that should not be done for those early preschoolers? Or is it to their benefit to be instructed and tutelage by an instructor at the age of 3 and 4? Yes, we will be talking about those issues and bringing information to bear about the benefits of a child getting early instruction. Right about now, I'd like to borrow your airwaves for 60 minutes, and we will be sure to give you your airwaves back, and we will give you your world right back. And right now, we're going to go to station identification. Our call number is 646-478-0270. Stay tuned for station identification.
I'll be brief. I won't hold you up right. Some come and see. I'll get straight to the point. In no time, I'll have you up out of this tour. I'll be short. I won't keep you like you're in some jury court, waiting while debating which plaintiff case will prevail, or deciding which one will go to jail. Yes. The floor. I'm a poet, for those of you who don't know it, and it's been my real intention to show it.
Yes, and we're back. Welcome to the Care to Read Room. Thank you for joining us once again on this segment and this journey that we're taking. And as you know, as is and as always, we always look to our right and to our left for our ancestors and for our elders to get permission to speak. But before I do that, I'm going to ask Terrell to purify me prior to the libation ceremony. And as I prepare to get ready for the libation ceremony, I look to my right, and I see that my elders are giving me the nod. Elders, do I have permission to go ahead and speak? Do I have permission to go ahead and speak, elders? Thank you very much. I've gotten a nod from an elder to go ahead and speak. And I will begin this process of getting ready for the ritual and preparing you for the ritual and understanding that we do this for the benefit of our African families. We are trying to prepare an African village concept. It is no longer necessary for a village to raise a child, because we know a village has no parents there. It is not an institution, but we must raise up a parent in order to raise up a village. Consequently, therein we can raise up a child. As you follow along with me, as I prepare to pour libations to the east, to the west, to the north, and to the south, we call on our great ancestors, the ones who have gone on before us. We call on our ancestors. It said in the Daughters of the Dust, Eli, call on the old ancestors so that they will come and pick you up, and they will come and sweep you up fast and quick, and they will open the way for you. And we call on the ancestors because we know it is up to the living to stay in touch with the dead. Ladies and gentlemen, as I call out these heroes and sheroes, will you please follow along with me as I continue to say the word Ashe. And I am also going to ask an elder to be a part of this show, as the elder will come and do a special prayer for us. If you will bear with me as I put this ritual together, knowing that it's important that African Americans should always honor rituals in their life, and knowing that, and honoring the fact that we have rituals, we not only have a heritage, but we also have a culture. I am going to see if I can get this elder on the line to be a part of our ritual. Thank you very much. As we prepare by taking deep breaths and preparing for this ritual, thank you for joining along with me. Taking deep breaths, breathing in and out, following along with the meditation. We're going to ask our elder to join us a little bit later because we're going to have someone to bring her in on the line, and she'll be joining us. We take deep breaths in and out, and we prepare ourselves. We will go on and begin with our pledge, and you know it's important that we should acknowledge our flag and our pledge to ourselves. Here's to the flag of mine, the red, black, and green, hopes in the future by Africa has seen. Here's to the red of it, great nations shall know of it in time to come. Here's to the blood that shall flow of it. Historians shall wait of it. Great flag of mine. Here's to the black of it. 400 million back of it. Whose destiny depend on it. The red, black, and green of it. Old flag of mine. Here's to the green of it. Young man shall dream of it. Face shot and shelled of it. Maiden shall sing of it, having it so high. Here's to the whole of it, colors brought and pole of it, pleased is my soul with it, regardless of what is told of it, thanks to God for giving it, great flag of mine. As I call on the ancestors today, asking them to allow us to stand on their shoulders, as they pick me up and they are opening the way so that we can see our way clearly. I thank the ancestors today, and I call on our heroes and sheroes. As I call on Zora Neale Hurston, I say Ashe. W.B. Du Bois, I say Ashe. Harriet Tubman, Ashe. Langston Hughes, Ashe. Louis Armstrong, Ashe. Jackie Robinson, Ashe. Dr. Charles Drew, Ashe. Booker T. Washington, Ashe. Then the final one, I say Malcolm X, Ashe. As we called on our heroes and sheroes, it is up to the living to stay in contact with the dead. So I then will call on my personal ancestors, my mother and my father, and my family. I call on Robert Jenkins, Ashe. Clara Mae Jenkins, Ashe. Tommy Pete Harvey, Ashe. Sam Lilly, Ashe. George Lilly, Ashe. Aunt Ma Lilly, Ashe. Mary Lou Hawkins, Ashe. George Jenkins, Ashe. Emmanuel Fay, Ashe. Michelle Harvey, Ashe. Then I call on my personal head, my father's spirit, Obatala, Ashe. My mother's spirit, Yamenja, Ashe. As we call on these spirits, that they may know that we have not forgotten them, that in calling their name, it keeps their spirit alive. It keeps them here present with us here and now. It shows us how to properly prepare ritual so that our children can see the benefit of acknowledging our traditional African ancestorship. It is important for us to allow our children to see this ceremony. Mothers and fathers, it is up to you to train up a child the way that he should go. And as we prepare this ritual and knowing that it is important that we ask our ancestors to stay with us. Stay with us, ancestors. Be with us. Be present in our day-to-day life. Go on the job and open up the door and make it plain for us. In the courtyard, out in the vineyard, in the business industry. Ancestors, we cannot do it without you. It is your strength that we depend on. And as I ask you to be a part of my life, when you come into being, remember us and always speak on our behalf and making sure that our families have not been forgotten. And your name will not be forgotten. You will forevermore be spoken of. We thank you, ancestors. I am whole and I am free because I can remember the time when we were molested and unable to speak of our ancestors. I thank you. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, may it be acceptable. As we begin to invite those Christians in, those Islamic people, the New Age, New Thought, you're all welcome here today. Come and sit and sup with us and take part in the conversation. Come and be a part of our institution. Come and sit with us and break bread of understanding. We thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this ritual. And most of all, we thank the ancestors for allowing us to crawl across their back on their shoulders today. It is very important that you should know, African family, you have a heritage, not just a heritage, but you have a culture, which all universe and all other organizations sprung up from. The foundation of the African created culture and diversity for every other nationality. There is the one human race. Thank God for giving that human race. And to those of you who are mothers of the world, our children have become scattered and fragile and disenfranchised. But we must gather our children, those that are wayward, and we must show them the direction back to the Father. We must lead them back to consciousness, understanding, law-abiding citizens. We must show them humanity, because we were first to give humanity and reasoning to the world. We must make them understand, as their elders, we are responsible for our children. And we must, without a doubt, be at the head and not the tail. We must be issuing a warning and giving instruction, as we are called forth to be a part of this great new revelation. For 2012, during that year, we have to come into right standing. Iwapelu, good character and good conduct. We must come into understanding of who we are. We must know that we are God today. We must know that we have pressed God forward within our being, not outside in a planetary space, but within us. Yes, you occupy and share a space with God. Isn't it great to know that God cooperates with you on one accord, and that when you speak positive motivational words to yourself and affirmation, you are speaking to yourself to do those things that you're asking God to do. Now, God, please know this. It is no disrespect in calling you God today, but it's only meant to put you in your proper place so that you can rise up and be able to give a solution for the end time. We need a solution for the end time. Make no mistake about it. The only Jesus that you will ever see is in you and I. We must make that Jesus come alive within ourselves. We must also understand that the God we're looking for is also present within us too. And as we humble ourselves, not because of ourselves, but in spite of ourselves, know that this flesh has no good thing in it. Know that the heart is desperately wicked, and who could know it? We are pushing the spirit forth today. The spirit man is who we're speaking to today. Wake up the spirit man and let him know today is your day. Today is your day. You are whole and you are free, but you must reach back and pull your brother and sister up. You cannot have salvation and freedom without freeing a race of people. Let us become free today in our spirit, in our thinking, in our mind, and in our constitution. We thank you, Father, for allowing us to be able to bring forth the word to you. May the living water spring up in us. May we each be an example for our children to see. May we each be a model for all institutions. May we understand that we are called to a higher order and a higher consciousness. May consciousness prevail today. May you wake us up so that we become conscious-minded individuals. Even though we are in a distant land, a foreign land, having an earthly experience here, help us to understand that we are aliens here on this campus, and we're just passing through. But help us to understand that we have a home set aside for us in a place where we will live again and be a part of the new system. Now, you can help that process, ladies and gentlemen, by teaching your children and preparing them to know thyself. That's right. Know thyself. Know what you're capable of doing and what you are capable of performing. It is important that you know that you operate with the full faculty, knowing that God's essence is in you. You no longer have to think that you're helping, but you call on your ancestors, Eli, and they will pick you up, and they will make you strong, and they will make you free. And tell them that Paul said, let your light shine on the world. Let your light shine on the world is what Paul said. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for participating with us in that ceremony. And we're going to bring the music down and bring to you I am whole and I am free. I am whole and I am free. Meditate on the word, ladies and gentlemen.
Meditate on the word. Arranged by the author Sherelle Omiika Bidiako Garth. While sitting here in the night, waiting for daylight, I stop and meditate on the words of the affirmations that I've heard. While reflecting back on the words, I can recall you are the head and not the tail. You are to succeed and not to fail. These are the promises that are needed, which are to be heeded while meditating on the word. So whenever I'm feeling low, I know just where to go. I go to the word for meditation without a doubt or hesitation. You see, when I meditate, I don't sleep. I dream in order to stay ahead of the games and scheme. I meditate on the word both day and night, for I know that it's not by might, but by his word, which has given me sight. While meditating on the word, I'll whisper words of power that will keep me focused every hour upon hour. I'll meditate on the word, for I know my way to success remains open and clear.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. You have your Omeka 7 in the house, Lady Jaguar Phone, for some of those who know me personally like that. You can call in now. The phone lines are open at 646-478-0270. Please call in with your questions and answers. This evening's show has been prepared for you. Pre-K, how young is too young for tutoring? How young is too young for tutoring? As you know, we talked about curriculum yesterday and the types of curriculums that are included in our education. I did share with you the God's approach, went over some of the concepts that will be put in our curriculum, and you'll be able to share that curriculum shortly, as soon as that curriculum is placed online. We did have Brother Imhotep on with us, sharing his concept and philosophy of good curriculum for African-centered schools. Today we're going to persist on the topic of pre-K. That is pre-kindergarten, ladies and gentlemen. How young is too young for tutoring? Is it important for us to start off by tutoring at an early age? Before we start that topic, I do have a guest in the audience. We're gonna continue on that topic. And we're going to bring our guest in shortly. Look like we've lost her. Sherelle, we need to come back and dial the number. We lost Maddie. Okay, come and dial the number. And we're going to start by saying preschoolers, just who are preschoolers? What are the age groups for preschoolers? And what necessitates a preschooler? Most students that are preschoolers are between the years of 3, 4, and 5. They cannot enter into the school program unless they're potty trained and they're at least the minimum age of 3. Now, the preschoolers are now going to Head Start, and some of them are even going to public schools because there's funding now to cover preschoolers. And some of the programs are the early intervention programs. Not necessarily just preschool, but early intervention programs. And those early intervention programs that we are talking about are for children with special needs.
Can you bring your vocal back up to real?
They are for children who have special needs, that are challenged, who have disabilities, who might have been diagnosed at birth. These are the children that are early intervention. Now, I'd like to read you a reprint from the Wall Street Journal, and that reprint is a preschool prep, How Young is Too Young for Tutoring. And it goes on to say that the fast-growing service and the drills of tots and math and reading during multiplication at age 2. Okay? Multiplication at age 2. Now, some of these children are being asked to perform and these tutoring programs, and they're doing mathematics and they're reading. Is that a coincidence? Are you shocked, ladies and gentlemen? There's some brilliant preschoolers. I've had the opportunity of being introduced to several of them over the past 5 years. I'd say over the past 6 years, to be exact. And visiting those preschoolers and having them a part of my class, I discovered that some of these children have the faculties in place and were not delayed. And the ones who were not at maturation, but at full maturation, and were capable of learning. Yes, in my opinion, they were capable of learning and being tutored. This meant that we were giving them a head start or a jump start to go into kindergarten. And before they finished with the preschool program, by the end of the year, they would be introduced to readiness skills that were part of kindergarten. I experienced that through testing some of these children that they were far more capable than keeping them at home, letting them sit in front of a television set, and being taught. They were far more capable of doing mathematics as well as reading than what most people think. Now, I have some people that have a different philosophy. They think that child needs to stay home and socialize. However, they can get socialization in a preschool setting as well as at home. Mothers also come and be a part of the class, so they do have interaction with mother. At the same time, some of these children perform beautifully, and they're geniuses. Out of all the children I ever taught, I realized the preschoolers were the most genius. And all I ever wanted to learn, I learned in preschool. They taught me how to share. They taught me when it was necessary to take turns. They taught me how to cross the street. They taught me things that I took for granted because they were family-oriented. Pause for a minute, ladies and gentlemen, for station identification. They taught her all types of opportunities. These children taught me more than any of the children I had ever worked with before. They taught me that it was necessary to stay together. It was necessary to hold hands. And these are some of the things that you would never learn from older children. So there's a lot going on here with the preschoolers in learning and where teachers gain from them as well. Now, let me get back to the tutoring. Why do I think it's necessary to have preschoolers tutor? It's necessary because their brains and the windows are open at the age of birth to three. That windows will never be open again at that particular point where those brain cells are open to the point of learning and absorbing information. Cognitive information, concrete information, all of these things are available to these little intelligent minds. It is very important that at that time we take advantage of that window while it's open. What do I mean, Omi? A window that's open? What do I mean? I mean the windows of learning, the ability to comprehend, and the ability to absorb information. During that particular time, when you put information in front of these children, they're like a sponge. They absorb that information, they internalize it, and most of them are able to process. What I mean by process is critically take information, break it down, regurgitate it, explain to you how they derive their answers. Now, don't think it's strange that kindergarten's work is different from preschoolers. Most preschoolers that I've ever taught are in competition with kindergartners, and they give them a run for their money. As they see the kindergartners excelling, they want to be a part of that group also. 9 times out of 10, when you go into a mixed classroom of 3 and 4-year-olds, at least in my classroom, it was rather difficult to determine who was actually the kindergartner. Sometimes those 3-year-olds can give the kindergartners a challenge. They might have maturation problems in some instances where they're not mature at a certain point, but then there's also situations where they can hold their own. Now, according to this article, how do you teach a tiny tot? What do you do different? Well, you really don't do anything different. Environment is everything, teachers. And teachers, if you're not out there listening, please come in and please take a seat, because some of us may be K-9, just for kindergarten. We might have never thought about teaching preschool. It's a wonderful thing. It is a wonderful thing, teachers. After teaching K-9, I discovered that kindergarten and preschool was my favorite. And the reason why I say that, their little light bulbs go on constantly when they're discovering something. The life cycle, understanding scientific notation, all of these things can be taught to kindergartners and preschoolers. I discovered that my children were natural-born researchers and scientists, and they were always conscious of the fact that they can be a part of this understanding of science. They were always involved with science and understanding it. Now, the one thing that I want you to understand is that when you're teaching kindergartners to be scientists and researchers, it's important that you explain to them the scientific notation or the scientific method. The reason why I say that, it gives you a hypothesis, collecting data, and the research, and then the output. It shows them a process the same process you use for learning. And in teaching those children this at an early age could be the best thing you could ever do. Not that every child will be a scientist. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that they need to know how to process critically. And they need to be able to give you a reason for their output. Reasoning is what we're looking for. Now, with the preschoolers, you will find that they are natural-born learners. With Montessori, which is a methodology, the environment is merely set to invite the child in for learning. And in setting the environment, you need not do anything but give them an instruction of how something works. Once you put that object on the shelf, you go back and repeat those procedures. You then must record the process that they take in executing that particular project. And you keep record if they can master it. We're looking for mastery. And that's another thing. In preschoolers, teachers are looking for mastery. Whereas in the upper groups and the older children, children just have to get a bare passing grade. With preschoolers, we're looking for them to master their cognitive skills and their concrete skills. Preschoolers can become such masters of things because they do things over and over again until they master it. They're little geniuses. They want to master things. Now, of course, you know you have to be very conscious about the environment. The room tempo, what type of music is playing, what type of instruments are playing, how are the children socializing, are they in one big group, are they limited? You must tell children what their limits are. You must show them and tell them. And once you explain to them that there's limits on how many people can participate in the group, that shows respect. And as they begin to learn to respect, they then learn to respect boundaries. Boundaries are very important to children. If they don't know where their boundaries are, sometimes they outlive their boundaries or go over their boundaries. Teachers tend to have disruptive classes because children don't know what their boundaries are. That is why the first 2 weeks you're constantly going over boundaries and rules and regulations until it becomes second hat for children, especially for preschoolers. Now, once again, back to children. Let's take a scene as if we're back in the Sylvan Learning, and a child may go in to receive tutorial help. Is that too early to be giving that child tutorial help? Is that something that we don't want to do because it may damage the child? I say no. I say the earlier the better, because as you begin to start to teach these children to read at an early age, they become master readers, and they begin to accelerate in different directions and different literature. You have a well self-adjusted child because the child is inundating and entertaining themselves with books, and with books they can travel anywhere. So the child not only becomes well-read, but also well-traveled. It's very important for you to understand, Wall Street Journal put this reprint out about what they have found. And let me read here what they said they found. They said, her tingling dangling from her chair, analyst Lee is bent so far over her work that her forehead almost reaches the desktop. That's at the eight silly. She gently teases her instructor, who is correcting the child's penmanship, and painting status. Now, children have a sense of humor. It's okay to allow them to use that sense of humor when they are executing problems. And when they know things and have the answer, it's okay for them to boast about it. You want them to be in competition with others. Competition is very good for children. Now, I feel that you must understand that under all of the circumstances about reading and writing, mathematics is good, reading is good, but scientific learning is even better. It's important that we give our children a chance to see what scientific learning is all about. It's important. And I'm going to go to station identification and see if I can get my speaker out here again. And as I go to station identification, can you hear it?
Can you hear it? arranged by the author Sherelle Omiyika Bidiako Garth. I begat this while in the spirit so that you could hear it. Don't fear it. Come and hear it. Pull back the veil and revere it. Can you hear it? Can you hear it? Oh, and if you hear them, don't fear them. Just remember and revere them. Create a sanctuary like to Mary. I mean with memories of their old souls, of deceased loved ones, foretold. Pay homage by pouring libation, for this was done since the time of creation. It's your only source of real liberation. Listen, can you hear them? Listen, can you hear them? For if you can't, then keep on trying. For all around us, I can hear them crying, petitioning on your behalf before the Creator brings His wrath. For they never really left us, for they have been with us and remain behind to comfort us in our hard times. Listen, can you hear them? Listen, can you hear them? For they will surround you like fire when the fire draws near. So have no fear. Remember that the way is open and clear to assist you in, my dear.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And thank you for joining us in the Care to Read room. You have your Omiyika 7 in the house, the one you need, and the advocate, the one you want. Thank you so very much for joining us this evening. It looks like that we are having some complications in getting our guest speaker in the room. She is an expert on child development. Let me see if I can try another line. Hold on for 1 second, please.
Betty Harvey?
Yes.
Betty Harvey, you'd like to know about child development and what do you think children should be doing when they first start learning?
Our children in child development for learning should be learning. They should be grasping and learning, and parent and should be teaching them. As they grow up, they're small. Sure, they're small. They're young, and they're at the learning stage then. And they're supposed to be taught. As they grow older, they should be taught. And that's before school? Yes. They should be taught before they even go to school. And I think it starts at home. It starts with the parents. And parents should teach their children. And you know what? If we teach our children, when they get older, then they will know. And they will follow the directions that we give them, because we're going to give them the Bible direction, and they're going to follow it. And if you teach them, then they have a know. They have a know. And children learn as infancy, that's a good time to start teaching them at infancy. You teach them the, beg your pardon? You teach them about the toe. You teach them about everything that they should know. By their eyes, their nose, and all of that. And at an early stage is when they should be taught about these things. And when you start teaching them at an early stage, you see they begin to learn, and you see it come out of them.
Thank you, Mrs. Harvey, for that information. Mrs. Harvey has given us the verdict after teaching children for over 50-some years of raising many children. She's given her philosophy on the early indoctrination of preschoolers and giving them a chance to learn at an early age. As you know, there are special curriculums for preschoolers, Mrs. Harvey, and the various different special curriculums. Do preschoolers need different curriculums than regular children?
In some cases, they do. In some cases, they don't. And sometimes you will find some children are so smart that when you tell them one thing and then you go on to another, they'll remember what you told them the first time, and they'll compare the things you told them the first time to the things you're teaching them now. So they put them both together because some of the children are very smart. They reach out to what you tell them, and they would put them together, and they would learn from that. So that's why it's so very important that we start with them at a very early age.
Well, Mrs. Harvey, you know, I never doubted that preschoolers were probably the most brilliant children I ever met before. I met some geniuses during that particular path when I was teaching preschool. I thought that I wouldn't like it. I thought that the children would bore me and I would be just dissatisfied because I had no ability to strive. These children kept me on my toes. They kept me remembering things when I wanted to let things settle in my mind. They were also little researchers, and they, too, were scientists exploring and discovering all the time. So I found that the work that I had to do for preparation was the most important thing, prepared and being prepared for them. For all of you teachers, I say that you can't be prepared enough than having all of your curriculums and lesson plans put together ahead of time so that these children can utilize your time and you're not buried over in a book writing all the time just getting prepared for them. They will take you for a ride, and if you're not prepared and you don't have things set up for them in advance, when they come in, oh boy, will they give you a run for your money. That's why you have to stay late at night, and you have to put things together, and you have to lay things out for them. They are ready to go to one lesson to the next. They are sponges, so as they walk through the room, your room must be flooded with activities. There must be a flow of things, and I'm going to ask Mrs. Harvey, and she can remember in her teaching days, Mrs. Harvey is a retired social worker. However, she's worked with child development. I'm going to ask her, during her time, does she remember the play of the child? And did they used to call the child's education play? And do you think it's important to tell children that they're just playing? It's okay to tell them that they're working and going to school.
I think it's okay to tell them that they are just working and they're playing and they're going to school. But you can always confirm the both with playing if you want to. It all depends on how you want to get next to them. If you want to go through by the way of playing, you can. If you want to go through by the way of just coming out, turn them straight out, you can do that. It all depends on the child. And you know your children, and you know the ones that you're working with. You know the ones that you're trying to tell. And they would even maybe surprise you and come out and tell you. You never know. But our children nowadays is reaching out for us, and this is why we should have the knowledge to give them.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Harvey. On that note, we have an expert in the audience. Ladies and gentlemen, Mrs. Maddie Harvey is with us, telling tales out of school when she was once a teacher working with early childhood development. Mrs. Harvey is a social worker, retired social worker, working in the school system many years. Now, the book that I have recommended, ladies and gentlemen, for this particular segment is called Best Practice. And this is a new standard book for teaching and learning in America schools, Reading, Writing, Mathematics, Science, Social Studies, the Arts, by Stephen Zimmerman and Harvey Daniels and Arthur Dye. These gentlemen got together and wrote the practice, the best practices, which are normally used in any preschool or kindergarten. They always ask you, what are the best standards? What are the best practices that you use for implementing curriculum? In this particular book, they write about the renewing of our schools for emerging consciousness. They also write about the best practice in reading. What are the best practices? Should children be learning early? Should they be learning at age 3, or should they wait until their school age at the age of 6? Now, here in our state, kindergarten is not a requirement. It is not mandatory. Nevertheless, there are Head Start programs throughout the district, and children are involved and engaged, and parents are taking advantage. Now, the best practices in writing is interesting. Children begin to write when they scribble, and if you set up writing units and allow the children to scribble, I guarantee you if they scribble enough, eventually they'll be writing. and that is the first preparation of writing. And you create writing workshops for the children and do segments and teaching them. And this book, it goes on to say that it's important to know what the best practices are. And best practice and the standards movement started in 1990. This book goes on to spell out for the new teacher, what do I teach? What do I implement? And it just breaks down the real reform of what happened with the best practice, what about learning and teaching. It goes on to explain how to read this book. And, you know, this book is laid out a certain way. And teachers must have a good idea of what are the standards. What do I mean by standards? Standards are something that the state designed and require. And you can have your core standards, and these standards must be implemented into the curriculum. Now I'm going to ask Mrs. Harvey to come back and join us again and tell us, do you think that we're testing the children too much, and is it necessary to test preschoolers?
You know, I don't think that you're testing them too much. And I think when you start off at schoolers, you're starting at a very young age, and that's good. Because you will be surprised how fast they learn. They catch on. It's so fast now, so it's just pathetic how fast that the young people learn now. And I think the earlier you start, the better it is for them, because they learn fast. They learn fast. And I think when you can take your child at an early age and teach them and show them as you go along and they catch on, I think that's the best for them.
Thank you so much, Ms. Harvey. I'd like to read you a passage from this best practice. And it says here, look at the standard document. As the other major school subjects, good social studies and teachers have been longing to use the creative and powerful strategies to make topics come alive for children. And the National Commission and the Task Force have repeatedly drafted recommendations for reform of less successful classrooms. Unlike the other subject areas, however, social studies recommendations have been subject to sharp debate. Now, we've been talking about social studies and African-centered curriculum all week. It seems as though even in drafting a curriculum for preschoolers, it has been subject to debate. And what does that mean exactly? There are so many discrepancies about when to start the inception of the history, at the slavery stage or at the dynasty stage, and from whose perspective. There's constant quarrels and debates over that. So for so many times, the history part has been written with discrepancies and flaws. So therefore, you're getting your history from so many different perspectives. History is important for all people, especially for African-American people. They must know their history, and they can't be learning someone else's history and they be absentists from the history book. And that has been the problem. The black child could not see himself in social studies in preschool. They gave them a generic program that included everybody as if they had no real written instructions for the African-American child. There are written indoctrination and instructions for the black child, and there are necessities. Now, let me take you back to some research that Dr. Ames did over in Africa. In discovering that the children were learning at a rapid pace, not only about the situation of them learning to be potty trained and bowel trained, but also academically, these children were becoming intellectuals. These children were far more advanced than the Westerners. And this was known and documented, not something according to God, but it was documented. However, the routine things that were going on in the school caused a child who was learning at a whole brain level in the African setting to begin to start learning against their deficits, causing them to start to regress in school. Some people thought at that point that schooling was not a good thing for their early childhood because they started to see the regression and started to see the child become apprehensive about learning. That is because the curriculum changed. It was no longer user-friendly from the right side.
it became an immediate, logical, left-hand, aggressive side of the brain, when in fact the teachers needed to be introducing whole brain learning. Now, curriculums must be introduced with whole brain learning for younger children because they must learn that they must integrate knowledge from the right side of the brain and the left side. Those children can excel when that is done. When that logical brain side aggressive kicks in, children reject that. They no longer want to be a part. Not necessarily that they're failing, they begin to reject the curriculum. And that also is known as a fourth grade syndrome when they see children fail at the fourth grade level. However, for preschoolers, we're finding that mothers did not want to see their children with pencils and papers in their hand and not enough time to socialize and play. Socialization can be put in its proper perspective, and it must be. But academic must also be introduced to the African American children at an early age because they are so far behind in the school system. They're always playing catch-up. And the way you play catch-up is get the child advanced in the first place, and you don't have to worry about leaving a child behind. Now, this thing about leaving no child behind, to me, I've always thought that the curriculum was lagging. The child usually comes to you brilliant. And the things that we try to program the child to be makes the child become very dull and unelicited, and they don't want to elicit any knowledge of education. Now, I'm also looking at the fact that our children must be challenged. They must be challenged, and they must be given adequate information about education and not dumbed down information for preschoolers. Preschoolers are probably one of the most genius group of children you ever work with. And if you introduce it at their level where they can understand information while you're tutoring them, these children can master all the readiness skills. So when they come into kindergarten, they're not left behind, they're on target and on purpose. Yes, I'm recommending tutoring. Yes, I'm recommending reading at an early age because I know it works. As a kindergarten specialist, I found that children who are more than prepared and ready to go on into first grade are the ones that get most of the attention. The ones that are not learned and slow to understand and comprehend and can't use critical thinking skills are the ones that are left behind. Those are the ones that are being diagnosed for special needs and who are given limited amount of material to learn and are not challenged. And when they find that they're not challenged, those are the ones that lose in. Early childhood teachers and providers, most of you know now that you're